Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yo, what's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. And of course, our friends at Straight Talk Wireless. Because look, man, let's face it. All these cell phone companies, they want to play games. They don't play any games at Straight Talk Wireless. They get you the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for $45 a month, saving you half the cost of big carriers. No contract, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. Mama Momo's here on a Wednesday. Hello.
What's going on, George? How are you?
I'm good. I feel optimistic. I know we talk about this every week, but I feel like I'm more and more optimistic, even though there is some pessimism in the air. But I will eschew that pessimism in just a few moments. But what is new in the world of Ramona Shelburne? Anything interesting?
Well, I think that we're doing something wrong in our life, okay, George? Because I just, like, right before the show started, I see this story come across the wire, right? And it's about Tom Brady selling his modified Cadillac Escalade for $300,000, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about Tom Brady's car. Like, what are we doing in LA that we don't have a car like this, okay?
Yeah.
It's inside the actual car. It's like a private jet and a mobile office. It's equipped with high-speed internet because, like, of course. And as he's listing this car, Tom Brady says, "With such limited time in my busy schedule, the car gave me those extra minutes to study my playbook, make calls, and be with my family. My productivity went up and my stress came down. I hope the next owner will take great care of her and she will always be part of the Brady family."
Oh,
George,
for the love of
why
God.
Do we not have a car like this?
Yeah, you and I, we need that kind of stuff for sure.
Seriously.
But we would also need a driver, too. That's part of the equation.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But there's something we're doing wrong. Like, we should have gotten that. Like, didn't you just do a contract? I just did it. Why didn't we ask for something like
that? Ask for the Escalade. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we should start a hashtag.
For that Escalade.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. So that's my life right now. I have time to think about things like this because every day is Groundhog Day. Wednesday is not Groundhog Day because I'm with you, right?
Right.
So our parenting schedule is a little changed around, but most days are pretty much the same. I return my emails and phone calls in the morning. Then I come on from my childcare shift around 9:30 or 10, somewhere in that range, depending on what time you woke up. Go on a long walk, come back. We kind of play with him for another hour, get him down for a nap. Then I do another round of, I have like 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon to work because the nap plus, you know, Nevin takes over after the nap. So we
Right.
have a good chunk right there.
And wash, and, rinse, and
yeah,
repeat.
Wash, rinse, and repeat. That's what we do every day. I mean, it's nice.
Yeah.
And there's stuff happening in the world, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
What's been nice the last few days is there's actually been like news that feels like we're going somewhere, not just news like on the what ifs, right?
Yeah. So lay it on me. What do you got? Don't hold anything back.
Well, I think, you know, at some point this week, we're going to have a little more clarity about what the league's actual plans are. Hold on. I'm trying to get the cat out of this room here so she don't have to hear her on the air.
Get out of here, cat.
Come on. I think this week, you know, there's a bunch of board of governors meetings and there's a meeting on Friday, but they always have calls throughout the week, right? So there's different subcommittees and they're bargaining this. And one thing I talked to Michelle Roberts about, it was last week, but I've sort of followed up on it this week with other people that I think is really important to think about when you're talking about the NBA's return versus the versus baseball's return. They are collectively bargaining this right now. So in the NBA, they don't have to necessarily go back for a vote after everything's done. After the plans are presented and the Board of Governors votes on it or has some feedback on it, they don't have to go back to the Players Union and get like a whole ratified vote. It's not like a collective bargaining agreement. It's not like they need every single member to vote. Michelle Roberts is meeting with teams virtually this week, kind of laying things out, saying, here's what we're talking about. Here's What do you guys think? What's your feedback? The owners are talking on all their different various subcommittees. So, you know, there's like the competition committee and the finance committee, and and each one has like different owners on it, and they're going over specific plans and ideas. And then concurrently, the NBA is talking with our parent company, Disney, to figure out how we're going to do Disney World. So I think that's really all these things are happening at once, to the point where if people get on the same, people are already kind of on the same page. And if we just get people to put some pen to paper and say, okay, this is what we're doing, we're making these final decisions, George, I think we can arrive at something. We can arrive at a plan, at least pretty quickly. Whereas in baseball, you've just had a lot of bait and switches, and nobody trusts each other, and angry back and forth negotiations through the media, to the point where in our text message chain this morning, I went from, I'm very pessimistic about baseball, to, oh, I just sent a few more texts, they're just negotiating, never mind.
Yeah, it's all a ploy. I don't buy it. And here's the thing on baseball, because I do want to get back to the NBA, because I have questions for you. I have many questions. Yeah. With baseball, it's kind of like what you and I were discussing with football not that long ago, where in football, I told you that 60% of the league is on a minimum contract. Well, 65% of Major League Baseball players make $1 million or less. So because of that, the rank and file is going to want to play. And I think that because of that, even though they'd be taking the least amount of pay cuts, I think that you're talking about a smaller amount of players who are making an upwards of $20 million who would take the biggest cut. And yes, they are the superstars. But I think that ultimately, cooler heads will prevail and the numbers will get closer to what the prorated 82-game salary should be. It may not get to exactly that, but it'll get closer. But if they had to, if push came to shove, Ramona, I just think that there's too many guys. The numbers are too big for guys who don't make a lot of money who will want to play because they'll make close to their salary.
Interesting. Yeah, I think baseball is going to have a resolution on this. But, you know, you and I are in the business of talking about people doing stupid things, right? Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand if whatever this haggling is happening, this is not helping your game.
No,
like you're causing a problem. You know, I know this is just negotiating and this is back and forth, but by the time somebody quote unquote wins, or even if we have any kind of a deal, you're going to have done more damage in the public eye, because the public, nobody wants to hear about this right now. Well, nobody wants to hear Mike Trout or Bryce Harper or any of those guys making $300-400 million, you know, complaining that they're not making enough right now, because people are being asked to take furloughs and layoffs, and people have lost their way of historic unemployment. It's the owners know that they're using it against the players. I don't blame the players for fighting for, a more prorated salary based on how many games they're going to play. I don't blame them at all. But this is a case where in baseball, nobody wins. Whereas in the NBA, they're just talking on a joint task force and getting all their business in order behind the scenes. And by the time they come with a plan, they'll be ready to move forward.
Well,
you don't see any of the messiness.
Yeah, to your point, the well was poisoned, you know, over a week ago. And it's why I kept saying, whether it's Blake Snell or Bryce Harper or even Tony Clark, the MLB Players Association rep, like, you guys arguing about finances in public is a losing proposition. It's always been that way. The owners baited you into it. You fell hook, line, and sinker. So now what happened was that well was already poisoned for over a week. So now we're getting to the actual negotiations, and it's even more volatile, right? It's more contentious. Yeah. The audience and the fans are even more upset. And I think that because they took the wrong tack 10 days ago, now you're getting double the backlash as we move forward, and it's going to be worse. But to your point in basketball, there's potential for real solutions here. So let me ask you some questions about basketball and some of these real solutions.
Yeah.
Tim McMahon is going to join us in a few minutes to talk about this Mark Cuban plan, okay? And now, before we get into the details of that, because we'll talk about it with Tim, the one thing that, as we just kind of go over and treetop this thing with Mark Cuban, he wants a play-in tournament. He wants a 1 through 16, and you have a play-in tournament with seeds 17 through 20, and they play, the winners of 17 through 20 play 15 and 16, and then you're in. So in essence, Orlando and Brooklyn would face the winners of a series between, or a one-game scenario between Portland and Sacramento and the Spurs and the Pelicans. Those four would duke it out. The winners of those four would face the would face the Nets and the Magic, and then the winner of that would be the 15 and 16. I like that. I'm good with that. My problem with Mark Cuban's plan, and I'm curious to get Tim McMahon's thoughts on this and yours, is he wants all 30 teams to come back. I just think that that doesn't make any sense, Ramona. At the end of the day, what you want is this thing to be shorter as far as time-wise, right? Like, you want this to go by as quickly as possible. You want guys, you want it to be as safe as possible, and the less teams there are, the safer that it is. And let's face it, the reality is the if there's less teams, it's more cost effective for everyone involved in the NBA.
So I thought so too, George. I was digging into that this week and making, you know, asking people what are the real costs involved for teams to send players to into the bubble, right? There's going to be an enormous cost for testing. There's going to obviously travel, you know, travel and staying there. They have to pay for their hotel rooms and per diem, et cetera. But it's not like you're flying all over the country, right? And I think the cost for testing is not as bad as you think it is. Like, if you think about it, like, you know, you and me paying out, you know, whatever it is, $100,000 a person, or it's maybe it's less than that, but it's significant. It sounds like a lot, but I think in total, and you know, I've heard anywhere from 10 to, it could be anywhere from 10 to 20 million based on how many people are going to be there for the total cost of testing. But I don't know, that's kind of a cost of doing business of doing this, right? Plus you're probably saving that on all the different Delta charters that you're not going to have to take during the playoffs and all the different hotel rooms that, you know, you're going to get a fixed rate and a fixed, like, I don't think it's as expensive to have more people there. As you think, it's really just about the number of people in the bubble and the size of the bubble, you know, dictates kind of how safe it is, right?
I'm not talking about for the teams. I'm talking about more for the league, just kind of in general. Yeah. Like, the cost is going to be the less teams you have, the cost is less for the league per se as an overall.
Yeah, that's true. But that's also like revenue that you're not making back. So the way this works is, most teams have to hit a number of 70 games in their broadcast schedule, right?
Right.
To make their broadcast hits, right? So these are some notes that we got from Bobby Marks the other day, who's just like, it's just amazing. It's like we have a GM on our staff.
He's a machine.
Right? He just tells us everything. Yeah. So a team like Brooklyn, okay, I think they're the least amount of, they play the least amount of games. They've only played 59 games, right? So let's say at 59 games, if they don't make up any regular season games, if they go straight to the playoffs, they would have to pay back the Fox or Yes Network something like $8 to $10 million because they came up short of their 70 games, right?
Right.
But the first round playoff games that are not on ABC count towards your 70, okay? So if the Nets were to play in the playoffs, which right now they would be in, right?
Because the first round, for those that don't know, the first round, the local regional sports networks can still broadcast the first round of the playoffs. That's in their deals, yes.
Correct. If there's a pool play, right? Like, let's say there's the play-in or whatever it is, however we want to call it. Those would count towards your 70 games. So the other side of this, though, is like the regional sports network. So it's like Fox, Yes Network that the Brooklyn Nets are on.
Yeah.
They have a number that they also have to hit, which if they don't hit that number, then they actually have to pay back their subscribers, right? So you pay, I don't know, $5 a month for the Yes Network or Fox or whatever.
Whatever it is, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So the number that they have to hit is 60 games. Well, Brooklyn's played 59, so they're one game short. I guess they would theoretically owe their cable subscribers a credit if they don't get that game in. Like, let's say if the season is canceled,
right.
But you're only like one game away. So I initially thought that it was like really that hitting those local TV contracts benchmark was really problematic, right? I initially thought that, but now I don't think it's as bad as we initially thought, right? So let's say the Warriors, like if they don't hit their 60 game, if they don't hit their 70 games,
right?
How bad is that?
The Warriors are currently at 65 games,
right? You know, if they don't hit that, and I think there's also some other complicated things that you have to think about, which with how many of the Warriors games have not been able to be broadcast on their local TV because they were taken by national, which actually is significant for them because there were a lot of their games taken by national TV. You know, it's significant, but I don't think it necessarily has to be the reason why there's 30 teams there. And the resounding message that I have gotten, George, the last few days is players don't want to go out there for completely meaningless games, right? You heard Damian
right.
Lillard.
The Damian Lillard
that.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You heard, I think Bradley Beal has said something to that effect as well. And he's on a team that is nowhere near the playoffs, but right. You know, Dame Lillard is his team is 3.5 games out. He's like, look, if you only give us 5 games in the regular season, we can't exactly make up the 3.5 games on Memphis. So why would we go out there? Why
right, but if Damian Lillard was allowed to play in a play-in tournament like it was described earlier, yeah. then he's got a legit shot to get in.
So what I think is going to happen is, and I'll tell you why, is because I think players do not want to go straight to the playoffs. This is a really loud thing that I'm hearing right now with players and what they're pushing for. They don't want to go through what is essentially a 4-month layoff. Like, even if we're having a training camp, even if they have some time on the ground in Orlando to scrimmage or whatever they're going to do, nobody wants the first games out of the chute to be playoff games or even play-in games.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
we'll
really
have like exhibition games or whatever that I mean that are you treat them as regular season games, right. But they're in essence exhibition games.
So that's why I do think we're going to have a few regular season games before we would go to like a play-in tournament.
Now, do you think they do like I know the Ringer was proposing some sort of World Cup style group play? Like, at
I don't
this,
like that.
I don't think that. I don't no. think that makes sense. I don't even I you would know way better than I would, yeah. But I haven't heard that that's even on the table.
No. Well, I think it's on the table in the like here's a list of 10 options. What do you like? My guess would be that would be, you know, pretty close to yeah. the bottom.
And by the way, they weren't reporting that. That was just a suggestion. I know that some yeah. of our competitors have said, not the Ringer, but other competitors have said that is a report. It's not a report. It was merely a suggestion by them.
Yeah.
Like a conversation.
Well, I read
like
the story
having.
that Kevin O'Connor wrote at the Ringer. Yeah. And it was, I think that was in the GM survey. I think that was a discussion. But then he kind of, it was like, that's an option. Right. So it's yeah. not like nobody's talked about that. Yeah.
Right.
You can report that they've talked about it, sure, but I don't think that's really happening. Just, and I'll tell you why. Like, I just don't think people want to change things so radically,
right.
All at once. It's really not fair, right? If you're the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, like teams that were like top in their conference, and you played all season under the assumption that you're going to have a normal playoffs, like it's really not fair to you to just do this weird shakeup right at the end here, when you're already giving up home court advantage, right? Like. All the teams that fought really hard for home court advantage are surrendering that now by going to Orlando and having no fans. That's just sort of the world we're in right now. So why would you also then introduce this whole level of risk by doing this World Cup format that you haven't prepared for? And it's not really, I don't think that's going to happen, nor is it fair.
Okay, fair enough. So let's yeah. talk to Tim McMahon in the next segment, and we will ask him about this Mark Cuban plan. He's got the Cuban plan, like not my plan as a Cuban, but like the actual Mark Cuban plan for the resumption of the NBA. We'll go through that. We'll see what he's hearing. You know, he was on the call with Mark yesterday. So we'll talk to Tim McMahon. We'll talk to him about all this stuff in just a few moments. Stick around. We're back in less than 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Ramona hanging out with us as she does every Wednesday. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Tim McMahon does a phenomenal job covering the NBA for us here at ESPN. He's going to give us the Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So, Tim, thanks for hanging out, man. Hope you and yours are safe. I know you spoke, you were on a call with Mark Cuban about the Cuban plan, not necessarily my Cuban plan, but the actual Mark Cuban plan. And, for those that haven't had a chance to read your story or get a glimpse at it, what is the Mark Cuban plan?
Well, the Cliff Notes version is all 30 teams are involved here. There would be 5 to 7 regular season games, which the reason for that is primarily to satisfy the local TV deals, which has massive financial implications. And they would be competing for, well, the teams that have basically punched their playoff tickets are in, but they would take the top 10 from each conference, reseed them 1 through 20. The bottom four teams would face each other in either one game or a best-of-three series for the rights to play 1-15, 1-16 for the last two playoff seeds, and boom, you go into the playoff bracket. So what Cuban is trying to do is, one, make sure that they get the local TV deals fulfilled, so address the financial issue. Two, make it, make sure there's competitive fairness. And if we're being real honest, three, have a play-in tournament that would not involve the seventh place in the Western Conference Dallas Mavericks.
Yes. That's why the 1-16 seeding is important. And I don't blame him for that, because I'd be pissed too, because they're head and shoulders better than the rest of that group.
Oh, no question. If the play-in series or the play-in, if there's a play-in that's 7-10 in each conference, like has kind of been discussed, then the Mavericks, without question, would be the ones for the most to lose there. I mean, they are closer to the second seed in the West than they are the eighth seed in terms of the difference in games. But it is what it is. I think, and Cuban acknowledged, the biggest challenge to his plan would be being able to schedule that many games. The other thing is, can you bring back all 30 teams? The Warriors and Timberwolves would just flat out absolutely have nothing to play for. Some other teams would have just, very minor mathematical possibilities of being able to get into that top 10 in each conference. And obviously we're also talking about safety. The smaller the bubble, the more likely you are to be able to have a safe environment.
Tim, the fact that we're calling it the Mark Cuban plan is interesting to me, because most of the owners in the NBA don't put their name out there like that. Right? They don't like to necessarily negotiate through the media or put stuff out like that. Like, what is about Mark and wanting to kind of stick his name on it, right? Like, it's, when we pass a bill in Congress, sometimes there's the lead senator who's presenting it, right? Like, what is it that Mark's doing here?
Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but he doesn't exactly shy away from attention in the spotlight. So, that might be part of it. And I just think he's a guy who, he does put a lot of thought into things. Obviously, he's put a lot of thought into coming up with this proposal. I do think clearly that, there are several different, or really there's two motivations here: the finances and competitive fairness. And as part of competitive fairness, he's looking out for his Mavericks and trying to keep them out of any potential play-in scenarios. But the 30 teams thing will be interesting, because I promise you this: Mark Cuban is not alone in wanting those local TV deals to be fulfilled. Yeah. I mean, that is just a humongous financial difference if teams have to either pay back money or defer money into next year or beyond. That is something that that's a humongous economical impact thing across the NBA. I just don't know if it's feasible to have all 30 teams in that bubble.
Tim, let me ask you this about the potential of all these teams going there, right? I know that there are some teams, we had just talked to Nick Nurse yesterday, and he prefers, like, hey, if we don't have to quarantine twice, like, I'd rather just go to Orlando. Why not do that with everybody and potentially limit the likelihood of players missing game time?
Yeah, I mean, look, I went to college for 8 years, but only got one degree. So you're asking me things that are way beyond my intelligence level. I don't know. I can't even say the word of the, it's like epidemiologist.
Epidemiologist.
Yeah. There it is.
I can't even say the word that I'm not. Yeah. Right. So, yeah. I mean, really, I hear what you're saying, but asking me for an explanation, I mean,
what is the owner's explanation of that? Like, why wouldn't we just do it uniformly? Like that's really my thing.
Well, I can tell you, George. I mean, I can tell you. I'll help you out, Tim. I got you.
Thanks. You went to Stanford. I went to North Texas.
No. Well, here's the question.
Hey, I love Denton, Texas.
Say epidemiologist or Antetokounmpo? That's the big question.
Ooh,
right?
Epidemiologist is tough.
I can say Antetokounmpo. Yeah, but I also,
what was that again?
Yeah, the Greek freak. I can say that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Giannis is his name. I think, honestly, George, I think it's the players, it's just a longer time that they'd have to commit to being in a bubble. I really think that's the big issue. Because you know, right now the way it stands is you'd kind of have your training camp and you'd have your time to get ready for the season in your home market. Well, that's fine. You can go come and go as you want with your family, et cetera. That's not a bubble. But if somebody were to test positive during training camp, it wouldn't be as big of a deal because they're not around everybody else. They would just stay home and quarantine for as long as you needed. And you test everybody all the time. And they don't have to necessarily be in the bubble. But once you go in the bubble, there's like, you can't really leave. Like, you can't keep going to and from. So that's why you don't want to send people during training.
I'll second Ramona on that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Tim, let me ask you this. What was Cuban's thoughts on the alleged World Cup style group stage thing?
Well, he feels like would basically throw out the value of the entire regular season. And you know, I don't necessarily agree with that. And to be honest with you, I think that if you take Cuban's plan to wrap up the regular season, if they can feel like they can safely and feasibly have that 5 to 7 games, you know, satisfy those local TV deals, put the majority of the league into a situation where they at least have a chance to compete. And then instead of his play-in tournament plan going to that World Cup style group stage, you know, I think that could be an interesting plan. I am definitely intrigued by the group stage essentially replacing the first round. And it feels like that has some momentum.
Well, and Tim, I think what's interesting too, you know, about the Mavericks in general, they potentially have the most to lose, and they also have one of the harder ways back because their stars, Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, I don't know if they're back in Dallas yet or are they
they're planning to return next week, and so obviously they return. There's got to be a 2-week quarantine period. I don't know what exactly that means in terms of working out. You know, I am told that Luka in Slovenia, which Slovenia apparently is one of the places that has had the least impact because of coronavirus, but he's apparently working out daily and playing pickup ball over there. So, you know, it's funny because it's one of those things. Who do you believe? There was some buzz about, you know, Luka perhaps, you know, in slacking off on his diet and bulking up a little bit, so to speak. But I asked around people within the Mavericks and they said, hey, he looks good on Zoom calls. He's been playing pickup ball. So, but again, they're supposed to come back next week. I don't know exactly what the workout schedule would be during their quarantine period, but you know, they'll be in Dallas. And another thing, the Mavericks haven't even opened up. They're one of, I think, what, 8 or 9 teams who haven't opened up the practice facilities.
Right.
And Cuban kind of took a hard stance on that. Well, it is a little bit easier to take a hard stance on that when your two best players are across the ocean.
For sure. Tim McMahon joining us here, does a phenomenal job covering the NBA for us here at ESPN. Tim, thanks for the time, man. Stay safe. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Take care. There he is, Tim McMahon.
That epidemiologist. Let's try that one more time.
Epidemiologist. There you go. It is a hard word to say. Like, just by reading it, it looks intimidating. I don't think there's any question about that.
I don't
that.
Feel like it's that hard because it's kind of like three words put together. Like it doesn't feel like one word. Like, I think the ones that are hard to say are the one word that's really long, right?
Yeah.
But, like, when it's like, okay, epidemi, that's like epidemic, right? And then ologist, epidemiologist, right? That's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's like a couple of words stuck together. That's not, you got to get through the first one and then you just kind of pause and then you make it through the end.
For sure. Yeah, that's true. That's a good way to look at it, actually. Yeah. That's why you went to Stanford and not Cal. All right, coming up next, we talked about the Cuban plan. Well, Mike Tyson's got a plan and it's going to him paid. He's going to get paid. I will tell you about that in just a second. And of course, it never ends when it comes to The Last Dance. There's always more drama. We'll get to that in a moment. Happy birthday, Andre 3000. You like Outkast, Momo?
Oh, yeah. That was like the song of when I was his early 2000s, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe that was when they were super hot.
Yeah.
I remember that song playing in every NBA arena. That was like the warm-up song at like the NBA All-Star game. In LA.
Yeah, right before tip-off in most arenas, yes.
Yeah, that was like a song. It was like jock jams, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That was always on.
For sure. This segment brought to us by our friends at Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier. Don't forget that. Go to progressive.com. And if you missed any one of our interviews, whether it was today or all week long, yesterday we had Nick Nurse and Chris Bosch. Today, obviously, we have Momo All Show, and we just had Tim McMahon. You can check out the entire interview on demand section of the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts, brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with your credit card and that sends alerts to your phone to help fix them. It's pretty simple. What's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. So, Momo, would you get in a bare-knuckle brawl for $20 million?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, right? Would you get would you get in a bare-knuckle sure. brawl with Mike Tyson for $20 million?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah? I mean, you'd take him, you'd be like, let's go, Iron Mike.
I would just dance the whole time, you know? And then I would kind of dance and, like, make it interesting for a little bit. But we went and really throw down. And then, like, I mean, it would probably just take one punch. I mean, it would hurt for a little while. I'd probably be down. But, like, 20 mil. I'll wake up. I have a shiner or whatever it's going to be, you know? And then
move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Move on with your life with a lot more money. Yeah. Why not?
Pay Uncle Sam his half and then you keep moving.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
So bare knuckle fighting championship is a league and they're set to offer Mike Tyson more than $20 million to come out of retirement and compete in a fight for the organization.
Wow.
He said, here's the quote from the president of the BKFC. I think I know what we need to do to make this thing happen. The company offered 53-year-old $20 million early this month, but its next attempt will include more money as well as charitable donations. The former heavyweight champion last competed in an official boxing match in 2005, but has returned to training, obviously, and posted videos. Now, Mike said recently that he's got several fights potentially lined up, and none of it is going to be Evander Holyfield. Like, even though Holyfield has says he wants to come back. MMA star Tito Ortiz said he's been contacted by Tyson.
Okay.
And again, there is, you know, Holyfield's people want to fight Mike, but Mike isn't interested at the moment in fighting Holyfield. Are you in on any of just these fights just as a fan?
Maybe. Maybe Tito Ortiz. That'd be kind of interesting.
But it would have to be a boxing match. Like, there's no way he could fight MMA, like mixed martial arts with Tito Ortiz. He'd get destroyed.
Interesting. I mean, I think we've kind of gotten to this era of sports, George. Like, what we just saw with the golf match over the weekend, with the challenge, right, with Mickelson and Tiger and Tom Brady and Peyton. Like, we're into event programming. We're into, like, spectacles. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is, like, you start to create a few of them. So Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather was the first of these. It was done as less of a – it was a spectacle, but it was also real in a way, okay? And you were very curious what it would seem like. But that jumps the shark real quick, right? Because you're going to see now a lot of people be like, oh, man, that challenge was so cool. We should do it every month.
Right.
Okay. Well, if we did it every month, you'd get sick of it pretty quick, right? Like, it wouldn't be that great. So I would watch, like, one Mike Tyson fight, but I don't think I would watch four.
Right,
I would like the spectacle initially. I'd be like, all right, Tyson, Holyfield. But then you'd turn it on, and it would be like two old guys boxing not very well. And it'd be
And that's why it needs to be like a three-round exhibition. Like, it can't go more than that. Like, that's all you need, and that's good enough, and I'd be fine with that.
The build-up, the trash talk, all of that. I even think, like, don't even do Holyfield. Just do, like, Tyson and something different, like Tito Ortiz, because that would be kind of interesting because it's different.
The crossover, like, we had with McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah, like, a legitimate, you know, two guys who were –
still in their prime. Yeah.
Back end of their prime, right? You know? One or two fights. Maybe that's
so
it.
So here's the thing. Like, I'm with you. Like, we are in a sports desert right now, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're just like, we are grabbing onto anything. Like, you it's a mirage. You think it's water. You're drinking the sand. You're like, oh, it's sand. But you know what? Damn it, this sand tastes good. Like, I don't care right now. I need something. Right? I need sustenance, and the sand will do. But we're about to, potentially, get into a sports tsunami where it's just going to be sports overload constantly.
Right.
Like, if baseball comes back, my guess is there's going to be day games galore. we may have basketball games that may air, I would assume, potentially earlier than the normal 8 o'clock window on the East Coast. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, because there's still plenty of people at home. I just think that we're going to be inundated with sports pretty soon, which will be interesting. So to your point, if you're going to pull off one of these shenanigans, like Mike Tyson bare knuckle brawling or whatever, you better do it soon, because come mid-July, that stuff is done.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because I also think that we thought we're so starved for sports, we're going to watch anything, right? Question. Are you watching Korean baseball at 2 a.m?
I mean, I watched a few innings here and there, but I'm not watching. Right. I'm not sitting through it. It's too late.
It's too late. And also, I don't know any of the teams and any of the players. Like, what's been fun are the memes that come out of it, you know, like the highlights, like the mascot and, you know, they had the fat head
bat
behind
flipping.
Home plate. Yeah, bat flipping. Like, that's kind of fun, but I don't really – I'm not connected to any of the teams or the players or whatever. And, like, I watched the first one just to watch it.
For
just
the novelty. Because,
like, the novelty. And are you watching NASCAR? Because they've been back and they've been racing every day. Like, I'm not watching it. I don't – you know, it's just not my thing, right? So I think we have so many diverse options that, like – it's still going to, like, you know, The Last Dance was great because it was the novelty. Not just the novelty. It was really good. It was interesting. It was, like, a bingeable series. It was a big collective thing that everybody could watch together.
Correct.
But they just put the ratings out on Lance, right? They
followed that up. And it was, like, 850,000. Yeah.
Right. So, like, for comparison, Last Dance did 5.8 million, right? And Lance did 850,000, which – 850,000 is actually not terrible for a 30 for 30. Like, it's not – that's like what the Michael Vick one got. You know, I mean, it's not like nobody's interested.
It's not a flop, but compared to the MJ one, right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think some of it is cycling, Lance. Like,
nobody likes Lance.
Yeah, he's not a likable person. There's not like this big, like, you know, there was an interesting story, but there was also the – the week after Last Dance, like, people needed something else to do on they were going to not spend their Sunday watching.
I would have spaced it out a little bit.
Yeah,
it's just me and Captain Hindsight over here. I would have spaced it out. It wasn't my day to run the network, Momo. So I didn't get to suggest that one in the suggestion box. Coming up next, you mentioned The Last Dance, still drama seeping out from that thing, and porn stars going direct to consumer. Not what you think, though. Get your mind out of the gutter. Momo hanging out, all show, Sedano, 710 ESPN. Back in 90 seconds. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out today, presented by our friends at Navy Federal Credit Union, where they have one mission, to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. So, Momo, you sent us, we were doing our group chat discussion of what to talk about today. You sent us a great story on The Ringer. We were just talking about The Ringer earlier, and it's about the porn industry. And basically, during the pandemic, there was a question, much like many industries, how that industry could thrive, right? Now, I know there were plenty of stories about the website Pornhub and how they had record-breaking numbers and views or whatever during the pandemic. But that stuff is mostly free. So, for the enterprising folks in the porn industry, their question was, what were they going to do? Would this hurt them because they couldn't film movies and things like that and do appearances at events like they normally would? But basically what's happened is they've taken their own clips that they've had that weren't produced yet and producing them on their own and creating their own direct-to-consumer as opposed to going through all the normal channels. So there's some enterprising ingenuity there by the industry, let's call it.
I think everybody's doing that, right? Like, I mean, you know, do you want to have your podcast on a network or do you want to just do it yourself, right? Like, and Joe Rogan kind of went the other way. Like, he was like, okay, now I'm going to sell my interest, you know, to Spotify because I make more on a bigger platform. I'll get there all their listeners. Like, it's interesting how you go from sometimes you need the platform, sometimes you don't need the platform. But I think in the porn industry's case, it really is just the product that sells.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All day, every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
The whole thing with Pornhub, which is interesting, is like that it's free. So it's kind of a meritocracy, right? Like,
yeah,
the best videos win, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also subjective in many ways, like a lot of things.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, what are you into? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just kind of it. Speaking of what we're into, we were just talking about how into we were with The Last Dance. But good Lord, the nonsense just continues to trickle out about this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to call it nonsense per se, because, you know, Jack McCallum is a very well-respected, longtime NBA reporter.
Uh-huh.
And we talked about it briefly yesterday, where Jack McCallum had tapes from 2011 where Michael Jordan was telling the story about how Rod Thorne were having a conversation, Michael, that is, about Isaiah Thomas. And Michael basically said on the tape, if Isaiah's there, I'm not playing. And Chuck, as in Chuck Daly, the head coach, assured him that he wasn't going to play, that he didn't want him either. And it just goes contrary to everything that was said in the documentary by Michael. And look, here's the thing. I don't know about you. I'm tired. I was tired a few weeks ago of relitigating something that happened 30 years ago. I'm surely tired now, and it's no disrespect to Jack, but it's like, Michael wasn't the only guy that didn't want Isaiah on that team.
Yeah. I mean, look, Chuck Daly was the coach. Chuck Daly was Isaiah Thomas's coach.
Right.
If he would have wanted him on the team, he would have been on the team, you know? I don't think he wanted him. I don't think he, for whatever reason, he was fine not having Isaiah. And also, you're drafting a team, and this is probably the most important point, where maybe Michael said, I don't want him. Maybe he insinuated it. Maybe he told some other people, I don't want him, and then it got back to them. Either way, for team chemistry reason, like, there's no way they would have put him on the team at this point, right? If you know that Michael and or several other people on this team don't like that guy, don't want him on there, you just don't do it. It's bad for the chemistry.
Like, right,
you got
exactly.
Enough stars. Right.
Even David Robinson recently said in an interview that, you know, when you portray yourself as the bad boy and you don't make friends with anyone and this, that and the other, and that's your group, guys aren't going to want to play with you. Like, for David Robinson, who, again, is one of the nicest people you'll ever come across, to say that stuff, that's all you need to know about the way people felt about Isaiah on that team.
Well, and what's interesting, too, is that Jordan's two quotes, like, I read those quotes very closely to see if there really is, like, okay, was he lying? You know, generally speaking, when you have a situation where, like, a quote that you give to Jack McCallum doesn't match the quote you give in the documentary, you know, I always have this phrase, which is like, you know, you make, when I'm reporting a story, I try to make people tell the story a couple of different times, because you catch the inconsistencies, right?
Yeah.
Like, people forget what lies they've told. They forget exactly what lie they told to who, right?
Right.
And in this case, I don't know if it was necessarily a lie. I think he's sanitizing things for the media. I think he's basically, like, in some instances, he, you know, is telling people, like, maybe he's telling Jack this as, okay, this is the real. Hey, Jack, let me tell you the real. Like, or maybe he didn't know that was for a podcast. Like, maybe he's just telling Jack and not thinking he's going to quote him on this ever. But he trusts Jack, and he's, you know, he knows Jack will write it as a source or as, like, a, you know, there'll be some level of mystery to where he got that information from. And then, oh, lo and behold, several years later, the actual tape of him comes out. I don't know. I don't really know how it is, but what order that, or what Michael was thinking, or what he was thinking when he said one thing versus the other. Maybe he just didn't want to say it in the documentary. Maybe he thought he was being nice, you know? To Isaiah by not calling that part out. It's hard to say, but I think what it is like, it sounds like the same story, but it's told a different way because he's either sanitizing it for one audience or he's embellishing it for a different audience.
Right. Right. No, that's absolutely fair. That's probably what happened and how it went down.
Yeah.
It doesn't make Michael look great, but I just think that most people at this point are like, whatever, dude, we're over it, you know?
I think that probably Michael had something to do with it, whether it was directly or indirectly, right? But I also think Chuck Daly and, as you mentioned, David Robinson and a lot of other guys on that team. So, you know, there were many reasons, and I don't think it had to be Jordan as the only one.
Yeah, that's the biggest indictment, is that if his own coach didn't vouch for him, like, what the hell are you going to do there? You know what I mean? Like, that's just it. So, anyway.
I mean, a couple of years ago, people don't remember this because it's women's sports, but Team USA didn't have Candace Parker on the Olympic team.
Right.
And it was really lame, right? It was really, like, she was definitely one of the best players in the world, definitely should have been on that team. But that was a Gino Auriemma special, right? Like, that was like, we're back to our old Connecticut-UConn rivalry. And, Connecticut-Tennessee rivalry. Like, Candace Parker is a Tennessee girl and Gino's a UConn person. But also, I think that it was Candace speaks her mind. As you know, she's on TNT. She has a lot to say. She's, you know, she's not exactly going to follow whatever Gino says, right? She's going to do her own thing. And I think that when you have a team that's going to win by 50 every game, pretty much no matter who you have on the team, you can get away with stuff like that. Like, you could just say, you know what? I just don't like her. I just don't. If I have her on my team and she's not going to be obeying my orders and doing everything I want her to do because she's the way she is, right? She's like, thinks for herself and she stands up for things that she doesn't agree with, or she's going to contradict you in front of the team if she doesn't think that you're making the right call. Like, Gino has the power to do that.
And right.
I think, like, I don't think that's right. I think Candace deserved her spot on the team. I don't think the coach should have that much power. I think to me, the coach is far more replaceable than any player. But I also understand, for, like, his view of team chemistry, he wants everyone to fall in line. Right?
For sure.
Yeah. That's just how that goes sometimes.
Coming up next, Momo, a Lakers rival is thinking about wheeling and dealing, and who better to ask than you? So we'll talk about that on the other side. Stick around.